Welcome back. We're going to discuss our third unit on negotiable instruments, and that is the negotiation or transfer of those instruments. Previously, as you can see, we discussed what a negotiable instrument is, gave you the definitions, and remember, four types of negotiable instruments. You can have promissory notes, you can have a certificate of deposit, you can have a draft or a check. And we talked about the parties of those, who makes them, who accepts them, who will be the party upon who has to pay it out. Then we talked about negotiability. What are the definitions of those? What are the requirements and factors of negotiability? And lastly, tonight, we're going to talk about the transfer of negotiable instruments, the problems with the transfers and the warranties. Remember, what is the fundamental thing about negotiable instruments? They're a substitute for money. And as a result of that, you have them in the commercial context. They're known as commercial paper, and as a result, you try to use that as a substitute for cash. They are a means to make it easier to provide payment in a commercial context without transferring that cash itself by having another medium to do that. Once again, our definitions you have under Article 3. Negotiation means the transfer of possession, whether voluntary or involuntary, of the instrument itself by a person other than the issuer to a person who becomes the holder. Now, when you have the transfer of a negotiable instrument, it's not just between the maker and the payee. The transfer is generally involving the third party, and we'll discuss this. Who do you have as parties within this? And we'll define them. An assignee of a negotiable instrument is the third party to whom contract benefits, and contract benefits meaning the benefits of the negotiable instrument, are transferred. A holder of the negotiable instrument is someone in possession of the negotiable instrument that runs to that person. So if the instrument is made payable to that person or is endorsed to that person or is bearer paper, okay? So it can be one of three things. The instrument's made payable to him, pay to the order of Jim Jones, so it'd be Jim Jones. If it's endorsed over to that person, Jim Jones says a pay to the order of Fred Smith, then it would be the holder would be Fred Smith. Or if it's bearer paper, meaning it doesn't have a payee named on the paper, the holder would be the person simply in possession of it, because you don't have to be one of those people. Now, there's a special holder that is called a holder in due course. And we're going to talk about not only this in this class, but in our next series of classes, because they are a special kind of holder. And they take that instrument with such value that it does not have all the fences that can be used against them. So that holder in due course is a person who has given value for the instrument, they paid for it, or they worked for it. They've taken the instrument in good faith. They believe that that amount of money in the instrument that can be converted for that for cash is owed to them. And they have no knowledge that the instrument will be dishonored, meaning not be paid, or that it's overdue, or has no knowledge of any defenses on the instrument. If it meets those qualifications, holder in due course, then you cannot use usual defenses against them. A holder in due course is accordingly afforded special rights and status. So you have those three people who take possession of a negotiable instrument. First is an assignee, the person over which it is assigned. Second is the holder. And an assignee and a holder can be the same person. And the holder is the person who merely takes possession of the instrument. And the holder in due course is a person who takes possession of the instrument and has all those requirements as well, so that they have special defenses that cannot be used against them, special rights and status. Okay. When we transfer negotiable instruments, it is a safer means of transferring cash. And they are designed to be easily transferred. Negotiable instruments are transferred by the process of negotiation that we talked about last time. Much of the commercial importance of a negotiable instrument lies in the ease of this negotiation and how easily they can be transferred from one party to another. And much easier than transferring a big bundle of cash. You merely make a notation on the instrument itself that it gets to go to the next party. That's the negotiation. Frequently, that'll be done at a discount. So if the check was made out for $100,000, you might pay $95,000 and get that check to another person, meaning that you can take that for value, but not the full value. It can be discounted too. What is the effect of the transfer? The rights of the transferor, the person negotiating the instrument, are given to the transferee. So the person who is endorsing over that negotiable instrument goes to the transferee, the person who is taking it, the holder. So when a contract is assigned, the transferee has all the rights of the transferor. The transferee is entitled to enforce the contract, but as assignee has no rights greater than the assignor. That is a fundamental principle of black letter law that we talked about with contracts. The person who gets the contract can't have any more rights than the person who gives it. That's because the assignee is in the same position as the original party to the contract and is subject to any defense that could be raised against the assignor. So the assignee gets only what the assignor has. But when the transferee becomes a holder, the negotiable instrument is transferred by negotiation. The transferee becomes the holder of the commercial paper. And a holder has certain additional requirements that become a holder in due course, all those requirements we just listed. And the status of a holder in due course gives them immunity from certain defenses. So that's an exception to that rule of an assignee. They can actually have more rights in the instrument than the original person who transferred it to them. Why? Because they take it under those specific degrees of additional qualifications. And as a result of that, because society wants this commercial paper to be respected, they will give someone who's a holder in due course additional benefits that the original transferee, the original transferor may not have. But that's only with holders in due course. It's not with simple holders. It's not with assignees. Now, how does negotiation occur? It depends on whether it is order paper or bearer paper. The order or bearer character of the paper determines how it's negotiated. The negotiation process is determined by the language on the instrument. The order or bearer character of the instrument is determined according to the words of negotiability used on the instrument. It's determined at the time of transfer. The character of the instrument is determined at the time a negotiation takes place, even though the character originally may have been different. And we'll get to that in a second. Order instruments qualify the order paper as a named payee. Remember, order instruments say, pay to the order of X, okay? Bearer instruments do not have that. They're payable to bearer, payable to cash, or they simply do not have a payee listed on them. Now, how does negotiation take place in order instruments? Article 3 sets that out. If an instrument is payable to an identified person, that means it's an order instrument, negotiation requires transfer of the instrument and its endorsement by the holder to such named person. Okay? A negotiable instrument that is payable to the order of a specific party is order paper, which can be negotiated only through endorsement and transfer to that specific party. Now, bearer instrument, on the other hand, they're more wide open. A bearer instrument can be negotiated by transfer of possession alone, because it's who holds that instrument that counts. Whereas with order paper, it's got to go through the person to whom it is addressed. With bearer paper, it's a negotiable instrument merely by delivery to another human being. Okay. How is delivery accomplished? It is accomplished by physical delivery of the instrument. So it's got to be transferred from one party to the other. An endorsement is always required for a bearer instrument. Even though the bearer instrument may be negotiated by mere transfer, it may require the bearer to endorse the instrument. Okay. Now, what are endorsements? Endorsement is the signature of the payee on the commercial paper. That is all it is. It's the signature of the payee. Now, that payee may be the bearer. Okay. Because with the person who endorses a bearer instrument is the bearer. Okay. But when it is made to a person to the order of, like a check written to Jim Jones, it's Jim Jones that must sign the endorsement. Black's Law Dictionary defines endorsement as the placing of a signature, sometimes with additional notations, on the back of the negotiable instrument in order to transfer or guarantee the instrument or to acknowledge payment of the same. The endorsement is the person making the endorsement on the commercial paper. And remember, it is either the person to whom the instrument is payable to, and that would be order paper, or the bearer. Okay. The endorsee is the third party to whom the endorsement is made. So if I am Jim Jones and this is order paper payable to Jim Jones, the endorsee is the person to whom I wish to negotiate it with. So I will say pay to the order of Fred Smith and I will sign it Jim Jones. That means that instrument now can be paid to that third party. The types of endorsements. Blank endorsement is when the endorsement does not name the person to whom the document is paid. It's just a pure signature. A special endorsement is an endorsement that specifies the person to whom the instrument is endorsed. That's like pay to the order of Fred Smith. When I sign it, and be able to negotiate it over to Fred Smith, that's a special endorsement. A qualified endorsement is an endorsement that says without recourse, meaning I don't know if this is going to be payable and I don't want to have my bank turn around, because one of the elements of an endorsement is when you deposit that in a bank, you're making a guarantee to the bank that negotiable instrument is going to be honored. And a qualified endorsement, when you say without recourse, says, hey, listen, I'm not making that promise. A restrictive endorsement is an endorsement that further restricts the transfer, such as in trust for, conditional, or I only want to deposit this, which is for deposit only. Those are restrictive endorsements. Now, let's go through these endorsements. A blank endorsement is merely when the payee signs the back of the instrument. So when the endorser merely signs a negotiable instrument, the endorsement's called a blank endorsement. A blank endorsement does not indicate the person to whom the instrument is paid, that is the transferee. So it may never be transferred. It may just be deposited. So Jim, so here John Smith may just be cashing the instrument. But if you want to transfer it, it's now transferable. It's now negotiable because he has, the payee has endorsed it. And a blank endorsement turns the order instrument, which was made to the order of John Smith, into a bearer instrument. So whoever has this negotiable instrument now can get, so a third party, if John R. Smith gives this to James Jones, Jones can then turn around and get the money from this instrument. Why? Because of the fact that Smith has signed it. They've endorsed it. It now becomes a bearer instrument. Before John signs it, it is not a bearer instrument. It can only be paid to John R. Smith. After John Smith signs it, endorses it, it becomes a bearer instrument and can be ended up collected by anyone. The person who possesses an instrument on which the last endorsement blank is a holder. So when Jim Jones takes this negotiable instrument from John Smith, they now, Jim Jones is now the holder of the instrument. If John deposits it in his bank, he was the holder and takes it and gets the money for it for deposit. But at the end of the day, it turned into a bearer instrument unless it is simply deposited, in which that blank endorsement would go to the payment of John Smith. A special endorsement would say pay to the order of Tom Jones, and then you sign your signature. This term makes it into order paper for Tom Jones. So it's the same as if I wrote out a check to Tom Jones. This check, which was made out, it was order paper to John Smith, now becomes order paper for Tom Jones, and John Smith will give it to Tom Jones, and Tom Jones then will get the money for it. This is a special endorsement. It transforms the negotiable instrument from a order instrument for John Smith to an order instrument to John Jones. Okay. A qualified endorsement, as we said, is where the payee does not wish to guarantee the payment of the instrument. So when Kellyanne writes a check to John R. Smith and he endorses it without recourse, he's not guaranteeing to the person who he gives this instrument, and this is the same as it becomes bearer paper on that too. He's not going to guarantee the fact that the original maker of the instrument is going to pay off on it. Now, if he merely endorses that with a blank endorsement, he does guarantee the payment. Without recourse says, I'm not going to guarantee because I don't know if that original pay, that original maker is actually going to pay you on it. So this is a qualified endorsement. Next is a restrictive endorsement. What will be done with this paper? So when you put for deposit only, it means that this paper, which was this negotiable instrument, which was made out to John R. Smith, gets deposited in John Smith's account. That's, he's directing the bank in which he maintains an account to put this in their account. The endorsement for deposit only is a restrictive endorsement. It says that the party who you're getting it has to put it in, and that would be the bank, has to put it in the account. Now, what are some of the other additional issues that involve endorsements? An endorsement is the way that a negotiable instrument gets into the hands of a third party, the party that it is originally not intended for. So if I turn around and I have a check that is made out to Bob Farley, if I endorse it on the back, that endorsement allows me to cash the check, allows me to transfer that check, turn it into bearer paper to a third party, allows me to make sure that that check is deposited in my bank account. When you do that endorsement, there's some things that you, that endorsement will allow to happen. I'll give you an example. If somebody misspelled my name, the endorsement can correct that misspelling. The UCC allows for that. If the person didn't know how to spell my last name and transposed a couple letters or something, when I endorse it, I can say, for deposit only, or just sign my name properly. And that acts as the ability to be able to collect the money from that negotiable instrument. Banks also endorse negotiable instruments. So to simply simplify the transfer and collection of negotiations from one bank to another, because, you know, when I deposit a check in my bank account, it actually came from another bank. They have an agreed method by which the banks actually provide for endorsement. It's called a bank endorsement. This is done under the Federal Reserve System, whereby they guarantee the payments among themselves for that. And when you have multiple payees and endorsements, this can also either be corrected or made payable pursuant to that. Under Article 3, they have those provisions. Now, I can also endorse not only to an individual person, but also to an officer. So when I'm paying my taxes at the local town offices, I can endorse the check to say, pay to the order of receiver of taxes. I'm directing the payment, and I write that in. And even though it doesn't say who the receiver of taxes is, that is something which is allowable for an endorsement. I don't just sign my name. I say, pay to the order of receiver of taxes. When there's a missing endorsement, when the parties intend to negotiate an order or instrument, but for some reason the holder fails to endorsement, there's no negotiation. A bearer instrument needs to be endorsed, okay? And when the holder fails to endorse it, there's no negotiation. The transfer without an endorsement has an effect of a contract assignment, and the transferee that gave value for the instrument has the right to go after the transferor, but at the end of the day, there's no negotiation that occurred there. What are some problems that happen with respect to either endorsements or commercial paper in general? What about a forgery? Well, a forgery in either the document or itself or in the endorsement is not a valid piece of commercial paper. It's not negotiable. Why? Because it's not signed by the person who needs to sign it. It's not made out to the person who signs it. So that person who takes that forged instrument is not truly a holder. Why? Because it's been forged. It's been altered. So as a result of that, forgeries in endorsements, basically somebody steals it and then writes out the endorsement, that makes the instrument invalid. There is exceptions to that called the imposter rule, whereby there's three exceptions that provide that a forged instrument is not effective to validly negotiate the instrument. And that is when you impersonate the payee, when you have a dummy payee or a dummy payee supplied by the employee. Now, when you have a forged instrument and anybody in the possession is not a holder, that doesn't mean that the instrument is not able to be collected on with a forged instrument, because of the fact that if it's a holder in due course and they take it not knowing about the forgery, they still can perhaps get payment on the instrument. That's what our case is on tonight. We'll go from there. Now, what's the effect of misconduct or incapacity? The rights and the parties in these negotiations depends on who holds the instrument, but generally a negotiation is effective even though, excuse me, it was made by a minor or the act was beyond, excuse me, the powers of the corporation. At the end of the day, negotiable instruments, particularly with holders in due course, can be a higher level. And we'll talk about this when it comes to holders in due course, because that's really when it comes into issue. Lost instruments, if the lost instrument is an order instrument and it is lost, the finder does not become the holder because the instrument has not been endorsed. Okay, the mere fact that you have possession of it, unless you have that endorsement, the payee always has to endorse it in order to negotiate it. Okay, so unless it's been endorsed, now if it's been endorsed and you find it, it is a negotiable instrument, you have it. Okay, because what does that mean? It means that the bearer gets it. You turned it into bearer paper, but if it hasn't been endorsed, it's as if it never happened. The order instrument requires the endorsement of the party to whom it's paid. A bearer instrument, on the other hand, when that's lost, the finder as possessor of the instrument is the holder and it is entitled to payment. So that's why the order instrument, if it's been endorsed, becomes a bearer instrument and can get paid. If it hasn't, they can't. Okay, what are some warranties in negotiation? There's warranties of an unqualified endorser, and the scope of the warranties are as follows. A warrantor is a person entitled to enforce the instrument, okay? All signatures on the instrument are authentic and authorized. The instrument has not been altered. This is the promises that are made by means of an endorser. When I endorse it, I'm saying that the person who is getting the endorsement is entitled to have the instrument. That the signatures on the instrument are authentic, that they're authorized. That the instrument hasn't been altered, there's no forgery here, that it's not subject to a defense or claim, that the drawer of the draft has authorized the issuance of the item for the amount for which it is drawn, that the warrantor, that means the person making the endorsement, has no knowledge of any insolvency proceedings. Now, the presenter also makes warranties. Okay, that's the person to whom it's been endorsed. And the warrantor there is entitled to enforce the draft, that the draft has not been altered, and that the warrantor has no knowledge that the signature on the draft is unauthorized. Warranties, what happens when it's not been warranted? The warranties are not warranties of payment of solvency. So you're not warranting that the person who made the draft is able to pay it. The warranties are only about the nature of the instrument itself, that things like it hasn't been altered, that it, yes, those signatures are genuine. Qualified endorsers. A qualified endorsement means the endorser does not assume liability for the payment of the instrument as written. It's much narrower. And what do you do with transfer? Transfers made by delivery. When the negotiable instrument is negotiated with delivery without endorsement, the warranty liability of the transferor only goes to the immediate transfer. That's it for our opening salvo on negotiable instruments. Pretty soon we're going to move into our case, and we're looking forward to seeing you then. Thanks so much for joining us.